Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'll be your host. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the show. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions. Now, Rich is a former NCON specialist, a one-time compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count back in the day for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert. Also joining us today, a lady who comes here once in a great while and does the show on birds, Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Nancy and Rich, nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here, Ray.
Good to be here.
So the big news, of course, is the snow. And what does that mean for our feathered friends?
Well, first off, it means welcome to winter.
And it's too early, by the way. I don't want winter now.
Well, you can't help it. It's here.
All right.
It's not up to us.
Fine.
And it's here. So you know what? We got to deal with it.
Okay.
And what comes with it is the winter birds. You know, all those delightful little things that come down from the north and grace us around through the bird feeders in the backyard.
Such as?
Well, in the backyard, the snowbird, that would be the junco, which is a favorite around the wintertime that is attracted to bird feeders and entertains us through those gloomy gray days.
Mm-hmm.
Out further afield, we have the snowy owls that are coming back apparently this year. Last year, we had a banner year of snowy owls that came down from the north.
They don't always do that?
No. They'd rather stay north. You know, it's not an easy trip to go from Baffin Island to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, they're compelled or forced to do it.
Why are they compelled or forced to do it?
Food. It's all about food.
So the winter is too rough up north?
No, just not enough food to go around. Mm. And there's too many owls for the food supply that there is. And that's probably what this is all about. There's a few years ago, there was a bumper crop of lemmings, which is their principal food up north.
Okay.
And when there's an abundance of foods, the owls react by producing more young.
Sure.
What triggers that is a mystery. I think it's but it happens. More food, more babies. Then when the babies grow old, there's more owls, and there may not be so many lemmings around anymore. Because lemmings are cyclical, and they have good years and not so good years.
Yeah.
For one thing, there may be too many owls around, and they're eating all the lemmings.
Yeah.
Especially 2 years
cycle.
In a row.
Yeah.
So we have plenty of lemmings around here?
No, we ain't got none.
So what happens then?
Well, they come down here, and they find our meadow voles and field mice and other goodies that we have to offer.
All right.
But they're forced out of the north, and so they come down south, and they spend the winter here and turn around and head back north again, those that make it through the winter. The ones that come down are stressed. I mean, the good, healthy ones are back there at home. They own the territory, and they don't stand for competition. So the ones that aren't up to it are forced to find another patch to work, and sometimes they have to travel 1,000 miles to get to that comfort zone.
So these are the B-stock snowy owls. Not as good as the real ones.
The B team.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we're there.
Younger ones.
Young, and some of them are quite not healthy, and they don't make it. You know, that's just a factor of traveling 1,000 miles in grueling conditions to find a harsh environment to move into and try to make a living.
Okay, well, the phone lines are loaded, Nancy and Rich, so let's go right to them at 1-800-348-2551. We kick it off with Carrie in Plainfield, Mass. Carrie, you're up.
The Rich and Ray Show. I always look forward to it. Rich.
Yes.
Okay. You know, I have my feeding station outside here, and when the birds come, they have quite a choice. You know, I think they probably think they're at the Golden Corral. I feed them black oil, sunflower seed, and suet. I put out popcorn and crack corn. And actually, even what I do is I'll buy a few jars of peanut butter, and I'll freeze the peanut butter in the jar. Then I'll cut the plastic jar away from the peanut butter, and I put that out, and they seem to like that.
Yeah.
But my real question is, a lot of my good friends, they know I feed the birds big time, so they'll give me some of the leftover bread they have.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, it'll have the greenish, bluish mold on it. And I was wondering, is it okay to feed the birds that bread that has that mold?
good starting question, especially with Nancy here. So.
Yes, a good starting question, especially with Nancy here.
You don't want to answer this, do you, Rich?
I do, but I'll let Nancy take this one because that's really her specialty in backyard bird feeding.
Yeah, Carrie, what you're putting out in all the other forms, be it suet or the black oil or the peanut butter, that's nutritionally just wonderful food for the birds, giving them the calories and the energy that they need during the winter.
Right.
When you put out bread, whether it's moldy or otherwise, it's very nutritionally weak.
Really?
Yeah.
Even good bread?
Yeah, even like a great Italian loaf. No.
Really?
It just doesn't hold a lot of the high-calorie fats and proteins that all the other foods that Carrie listed have. So, you know, and am I a proponent of putting out anything that's moldy for the birds, whether it's in your, you know, letting your bird feeders get moldy or anything? Now, some molds can be toxic to birds. Are the ones that harbor on bread toxic to birds? I'm not sure, but generally a clean feeder, clean food, non-moldy food is, I would say, generally safer for the birds.
Okay, they probably have enough other things where they won't need that moldy bread.
Yeah, what you're putting out for them sounds...
sounds really delicious,
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah, really rich in the fats and proteins.
Why would they even
need.
Bother?
Yeah.
I have one other quick thing, too, is I live high in the Berkshires on a pond. And it was in early November. I was out rowing my boat, and I see eagles on a fairly daily basis, you know, one and sometimes two. But this one particular day, there were two flying over the pond together. Then there was a third one almost like playing catch-up to those two. Okay, so now I've seen three. And then about a minute later, I looked in a tree, and there were two on the same branch.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw five in less than a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty rare. I mean, I'm asking you, is it rare? Because I've never seen five in my life at once.
Well, it certainly is unusual, but there are probably a couple of reasons why there was that little concentration there by your pond. Might have been a recently fledged nest bunch that happened to be hanging around the neighborhood. The nest was nearby, and the young are still... bonded together, and they just traveling around as a small family group. And the other possibility is you caught them in the middle of migration, and eagle sees eagle as it's migrating by. It looks down and sees one of your resident birds there, and it swoops by to check things out and maybe continue to move on. So, yeah, it is unusual, and I'm sure by now they've dispersed.
Because that was right after that, I never saw it.
Yeah,
like
so
that before.
I would go for either of those. And since you do have a pond, I live by the water, and I take the bread that I have, and I toss it in the water, and the fish love it. I have catfish that rise up. They know why I'm coming. They hear me coming.
Oh, come on.
And they're waiting for me. No, seriously.
They hear you. They're underwater.
Well, they are, but they know I'm there. You know, the old fishing story, you know, walk softly because you'll scare the fish.
Right.
You know,
right.
This case, I'm not scaring them. I'm alerting them.
Okay, fair enough.
But in any event, the fish like it, and the gulls like it, and the crows will actually swoop down and grab the bread out of the water. And because the crows, really, they don't. Except for the suet. My crows don't go for any of the bird seed that I put out.
Mm-hmm.
But they do like the suet.
Huh.
All right, guys. Well, you answered my questions.
Okay.
Thanks for getting us started there, Carrie. We appreciate it. Okay, Nancy. So if I'm a bird and I see bread that is green and blue and I eat it, wouldn't I have an innate sense to know that this mold is not good for me? Don't birds automatically know if the mold is not good for them?
I would say not, but I'm going to ask the biologist.
Well, I say yes, they do. And they can pick out, they can know to avoid not good food. I mean, they got mm-hmm. sense enough that we're talking about adult birds that have survived, have gone around the block more than once. So they have a way of knowing. But they also have a very different digestive system than we have. You know, they have a reptilian-originated digestive system.
Yeah.
And they eat carrion all the time, mm-hmm. for the most part. Birds have no problem swooping down on a dead skunk on the side of the road. It doesn't have to be a vulture. A crow will do it. A blue jay will do it.
Yeah.
Cardinal will do it. So they have a whole different realm of acceptance than we do. You know, we're more sensitive to that stuff.
Okay. Let's go to line number... let's go to line number two. Laura in Westfield. Laura, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I have a problem with a male cardinal. I work for a trucking company. In the yard where we park our tractors and our personal cars when we're working, we have a male cardinal that came in during the spring, and he attacked the mirrors on all the vehicles. And when I say attack them, he attacks them to the point where he scratches them so badly that you can't use them anymore.
Wow.
We have done everything, including putting Walmart bags over the mirrors, turning them into the cars so that he couldn't get to them. He'll go between the door window and the mirror so he can attack the mirrors.
Wow.
On the tractors, he has, you know how big a mirror is on a tractor trailer truck?
Sure do.
He destroys the mirrors.
Wow.
My boss is tearing his hair out. We don't know what to do.
Uh-oh.
If we're there and he's doing it and you walk over and scare him away, he attacks you.
Yikes.
Well,
just at our wits' ends. We don't want to,
It must be tough.
All kinds of suggestions.
It must be tough to call the insurance company and have them buy that. Oh, by the way, the Cardinals are destroyed 12 more mirrors today. We'll be dropping them. No, what do you think, Rich?
Well, obviously, it's a male cardinal, and he's being a very male cardinal. He's defending what territory he claims as his own, which happened to be your truck yard. So, and those mirrors are another male cardinal that he's trying to get rid of.
But even when they're turned in against the body of the...
Obviously, he's found out that if he looks around the corner, that male cardinal will show up again. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah.
Wow, birds are dumb, aren't they?
Well, the thing is, he's so driven. I mean, he's being such a good male cardinal that it's driving us to distraction.
You know, what we like to say is that he's convinced he's seeing the best-looking male cardinal out there that's threatening his territory.
All right, we got to take a break here, but is there something they can do?
Well, you talked about putting the bags over the the mirrors. That would be...
He pulls holes in the bags until he can see the mirror.
Oh, boy.
Yikes.
This guy here.
That's an overachiever right there.
These trucks and that, we've been parking in the same yard in the same spaces for 5 years, and this is the first time we've had a problem.
Well, it should happen.
We thought in the spring that it was because he was getting ready to mate. He was chasing away another male cardinal, but
you were right about that.
Winter, and he's still doing it.
Well, the guy just is not forgiving, is he?
No, maybe he's going to mate with the mirror.
No, I don't think that's not what he has in mind. But
I'd say that if you can get some more durable bags on there, maybe you were heading down the right path there. You know, maybe a canvas or some kind of other fabric tote that he can't get through so easily, maybe.
Yeah, clothespins on the plastic bags that you do put over so that he can't part them. Mm-hmm. You know, some way of securing them. I think that's a good idea, Nancy. It's some way that you can secure them so that he can't part them and find that reflection. He'll have to give up sooner or later. And win that little battle. That's what he's after.
Laura, we got to take a break. Thank you so much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Back with Rich and Nancy and your bird calls coming up.
Support comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting landscapes by Jane Bloodgood Abrams and Dan Roop, and paintings of male athletes by Bruce Sargent through Sunday. Open daily, carriehaddadgallery.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thrones Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 275 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenAndParin.com.
We now resume our regular broadcast. It's Vox Pop. It is a birding show. Rich Guthrie is here. Nancy Castillo is here. I'm here. I'm Ray Graff. And you're there. It's Suzanne in Woodridge, New York. Suzanne.
Hi, guys. Hi, Rich, Nancy, and Ray.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. This is about cardinals. And I live in a very wooded area. I've been feeding the birds for at least 10 years. I have the black oil, and for the last several years, there was always a couple. I even got to see the babies, and they'd bring the babies in, and the father would feed them, and it just really warms my heart. And they've been gone since the summer. And just this past week, for the first time, a female showed up. I haven't even seen them in the area. So is there something happening? This is Woodridge. This is Sullivan County.
Okay. I don't think anything's happened. They all went over to that truck yard in Pittsfield.
Very funny.
They did. My suspicion is that they did disperse right after nesting. Birds will do that. They'll just retreat into the woods and pick up a more normal lifestyle. And now that the snow is here and you got the feeders out, I suspect they'll be back as that female has returned. And the other guys, I'm sure they have you on their Rolodex and will be back too.
I hope so. A lot of times. I've never seen them disappear before. They've been here all seasons, mm-hmm. and the couples have been here all seasons. This is the first time in many years, so I was hoping nothing had happened to them.
A lot of times right after nesting season or as we enter into the end of the growing seasons, there is an abundance of natural food that's out there, too. So birds of all types, cardinals included, will take advantage of the bounty of food that's just out there in nature, yeah. as they've done for thousands and thousands of years. And then, like Rich said, once things get covered back up, it gets cold, they look for an easier source of food and come back to the feeders. So.
Okay. They'll be back. Okay, that's good news.
Well, good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Suzanne. Yep, we have plenty of cardinals, and they seem to like our backyard.
They come in colleges.
They do. College of Cardinals. Okay. Yeah. You're too fast for me, Rich. Greg in Saratoga. Greg.
Yeah, and they also come with the Pope.
Yes.
They come with the Pope. Very nice.
My favorite bird of prey.
Yeah, hey, I got a comment, and I wanted to get your feedback and sort of a question. I get emailed every day photographs that a veterinarian takes. He basically goes out every day and he photographs everything from, you know, hawks and eagles, snowy owls, whatever is on his plate. And he does this faithfully every day. And the other day he sent me a picture of a blue-gray gnatcatcher. This is last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rather startled. I've been a bird watcher my whole life, and it appears to me that blue-gray gnatcatcher shouldn't be around this neck of the woods at this time of year. And I have the picture. It looked like a blue-gray gnatcatcher. So, you know, what's the occurrence rate, you know, at this late in the year?
Well, very, very, very unusual, as you suspect.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it does happen. And the gnatcatcher is one of those recent arrivals, expanded their range from the south in the recent decades. And a curious thing about that group of birds, the gnatcatchers, the cardinal, the mockingbird, the Carolina wren, and red-bellied woodpecker, a whole host of them that have moved up from the south, tend to stay longer, if not all year, in our area. And the gnatcatcher is part of that parade. Now, insect eaters, so they can't stick around all winter. And but I've seen gnatcatchers in December. And So my suspicion is that he'll be gone one way or the other. He'll be gone sooner than later. And let me just...
I suggested to Gordy to let the local census group, because he's up in Fort Edward, so that they might be able to pick him up on the census this weekend, I think.
Well, you know, that's right.
Aware.
And that's a good point, because this weekend begins the Audubon Society Christmas bird count season. And there will be a group out in your neck of the woods, and they will definitely like to know that there's a gnatcatcher hanging around so that they can check it out during the count day and include it. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with eBird, definitely a worthwhile place to a repository for these kinds of sighting reports. It goes to the Cornell University. It's a worldwide organization, and you can sign up for eBird and enter that kind of birding report in there. And that's a good way of letting local folks know what's going on in your backyard.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I knew that there was something, some sort of like hotline, and I didn't know what the name of it was. So, yeah, I'll pass that information along to Gordy, yeah.
Okay,
and then one other comment, just the quality of photography today that's available to, you know, for instance, this guy is, you know, I'm thinking back to when I was young, I knew a professional wildlife photographer, and he had worked in Thomas Edison's lab over in Edison, New Jersey when he was young, and then he later toured with the Audubon Society presenting films in person. You probably remember that in the old days,
sure,
Rich,
do.
In the 50s,
yep.
And 60s, so... You know, and now looking at this guy who is out there every day, and, you know, he has a little bit of money, but, you know, he can catch birds in flight, and you can see the venation on the feathers,
yeah.
And just the quality that's available today is just unbelievable.
And I'm with you on that. Digital photography has taken the world of bird photography and also documentation into a whole new realm. So
absolutely, and so, I've watched birds my whole life, and are, you know, familiar with quite a, you know, the general birds, but never seen them as well as you can see them with these photographs that are being taken.
I'm with you there,
Greg. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Greg.
So eBird, how do they weed out, let's say, someone who doesn't know a gnatcatcher from a blue-footed booby?
That's my job. I'm one of the eBird reviewers. I vet these reports. And if I get a questionable report or one that that has, like the gnatcatcher, would certainly raise a flag that will warrant further documentation.
And how would you go into the field and follow up?
I would email the individual and ask for what other descriptive information or perhaps a photograph or what made him decide or her decide what this bird was, so that we can be sure, because people will look for this information. If they're visiting Saratoga over the next weekend, they'll want to know what rare birds may be around.
Yeah.
And we don't want to mislead them. So we want to be able to confirm that indeed a rare bird is hanging out and it's at an area where they can get to and go see or try to go see. And we try to make sure that it's both a giving and a taking opportunity for birders.
Okay. Nancy Castillo is here. Rich Guthrie is here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Sandy. Are you on Mount Washington?
Yeah, Ray. How you doing, man?
Hey.
Oh, how's it Mount Washington today?
It's great. Before I tell you, the cardinal talk has reminded me there was a joke in the New Yorker years ago. There's a couple looking out the bay window in the winter, and the woman's saying to her husband, "That's Mr. Cardinal, but that's not Mrs. Cardinal."
But the New Yorker, you got to hand it to them.
I've got a new friend, man. He's a ruffed grouse.
Yeah.
Call him Rough G. I guess it's not that unusual for them to be tame. Is that right?
Well, tame is hardly sounds good. They're not. I don't know what it is with ruffed grouse. They're a chicken-like bird that lives in the woods.
Yeah.
And they have this peculiar habit of honeying up with people.
Really?
Yeah. I think he may be just very horny. I mean, even though I'm male and not the same species.
No, that's not it at all.
Thank you very much, Sandy, for that. We appreciate it.
They keep sneaking around behind me. I go for runs on my driveway and the lane in the woods.
Yeah.
And he comes running after me, puts his head down and points his beak and goes racing along and then stops like a roadrunner.
And I've seen that happen. And it's not, believe me, it's not you.
No, okay, well, that's okay. Good. I'm not really worried, you know. But
they will react this way to odd things, a car, a tractor, even a lawnmower.
I was out sort of visiting with him in the driveway the other day and some ravens started calling up across the way and he took off. Went right under a hemlock tree for cover. It was neat to see, you know.
Yeah, right.
Instincts. Yeah. I've got some pictures of a leucistic chickadee, you know, with a lot more white than usual.
Yes.
Is there somebody specifically at Cornell who might like to see those pictures? Is anyone interested or not? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Okay. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, every now and then you'll get this, what we call a sport, and that is a bird that has an unusual pattern of white blotches or...
Mm-hmm.
Just
a mutation.
It's just a simple mutation. They get along fine with their kinfolk, and it's an interesting thing. Sometimes it could be very challenging to determine just what kind of bird it is.
It's definitely chickadees. One more thing. Years ago in the early 70s, when I lived on the Cape, there was a pair of brown creepers nesting, you know, with the bark pulled off the pine and the nest in under there.
Yes.
And they were out. One of them, probably the female, was out with the young, and a shadow passed by. It was a red-tailed hawk going over, and I looked back, The young, the female had done something. They formed in a group on a pine tree looking exactly like a knot. It was incredible. I don't know whether you've ever heard that.
I've never seen or heard that, but I'm fascinated by it. And
it was wonderful. I mean, you just couldn't tell what it was, but it was just a neat thing. But
well, good for them.
And I love the show, and Ray's the major guy there at the station.
Well, I don't know about that, but Sandy, you're obviously leading an interesting existence up there on Mount Washington.
I am, Ray.
Well, way to go.
I listen to oldies shows from Canada and, you know, play a lot of music.
Way to go, man.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks, you guys,
thanks,
for
Sandy.
A great show.
I know.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo. So let's talk about briefly, and we'll get right back to the calls, I promise, the theory and philosophy of feeding birds. Now, I talked to someone, sort of an expert on things, who's counseled and said, you know, you shouldn't feed animals, even birds. And I said, but they're smart enough to find other food. And he said, not necessarily. Is this wrong?
They will absolutely find food. And if you were to withdraw food tomorrow, the species, those birds out there would do just fine.
Well, that's what Rich always says.
Thank
you, Nancy.
And you know what? It does help them. And I mean, think of the storm that we just went through in the last 3 days. Wet, 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 and then cold, and how tough it is for a bird to kind of have to weather those conditions. We hated being out there. Think about the birds, you know, and trying to stay dry. By feeding them, we can supplement their diet, make food easier for them to find so that they spend less calories trying to find food and can expend those calories keeping themselves warm. So
there's no danger of dependency being formed?
Nope, none at all.
I always think of it as a cheap bribe.
Just hang around so I can watch you.
Yeah, cheap mm-hmm. bribe.
I mean, it is for us.
Yeah. It brings them to your backyard so you could sit in the comfort of your living room and look out the window, and there they are.
But I will say that the more that we pay attention to birds and the more that we enjoy them, the more we want to do things to protect them.
Precisely.
So it helps them that way, too, is that then we'll contribute to organizations that help birds, Cornell.
And favor conservation mm-hmm. measures. Pay attention to the habitat that's around your neighborhood so that you will have a healthy habitat, not only for birds, but for people and children and pets and kittens.
Yeah. Well said. Let's go to Julie in Poughkeepsie. Julie, you're on.
Hi there. I have a question about thwarting the squirrels from getting up to the top where the feeders are hung on my bird feeders. What kind of lubricant, oil, grease, can I put on the metal stem so that little sucker that goes hand over hand, shinnying up my pole, will fall down, the squirrel?
Anything
that wouldn't be toxic to the bird.
I'm going to ask you or beg you, Julie, to use something like a baffle instead of grease.
Why?
It's not only in the possibility that the birds could ingest it somehow. It's the fact that the grease can get on their feathers, and then it affects their flight. Think about when a bird, you know, like I can picture a downy woodpecker right now just on a pole with grease. It's on his hand, you know, it's on his feet. It's also on his tail feathers as he props himself up against that. He could brush against it as he goes past, and it gets on his feathers and could affect their flight.
And so, their insulation. The airspace between feathers is very important for insulation against the cold. You know, when you start getting chilly mm-hmm. out there, they need that. They need that fluff. And grease can compact the feathers.
And there's other ways to...
Even olive oil or something like that?
It still, gets on their feathers and can impact the performance of their feathers. Their feathers perform so many important functions for them, flight, insulation. And there are other ways. I mean, there's baffles that you could put on poles that physically stop the squirrels from ascending that pole.
That's what I use.
And then also distance is that, they might also jump to it. If you have it 10 feet away from any jumping off points, then they're not going to be able to reach it by jumping. So
squirrels are industrious and clever critters.
Oh,
though.
There's that video they out there of that squirrel that goes along that clothesline with all the baffles along. And this thing had it all figured out. And oh, it's on YouTube. It's a wonderful video.
I've seen it. Yes.
You've seen it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's. I recommend it. It just shows you how industrious, as Ray says, these squirrels are getting around to get to the food. Yeah.
Well, he slid off a few times. I was watching him. You know, I said, ha, ha, ha,
yeah.
just without having anything on it because it was a thin pole, right? Yeah.
But the last thing. Go ahead.
Okay. And then yesterday, he was shinnying up by wrapping his arms almost around himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hand over hand. And he still made it up. Oh, so much. Thank you for that. Now, I have another question which I've been wanting to ask for years.
Okay, very quickly because we have a break coming up, but go right ahead.
All right. Many years ago. About 20. I was in a parking lot looking up at the sky to see if I should take my umbrella when I saw from horizon to horizon a lane very, very, very high up in the sky, I don't know how high, of hundreds of thousands of birds all going in the same direction.
Right.
Looked around to see if I could bring someone else's attention to look at that. There was nobody around.
No.
Then I waited for a while to see if they were circling, if it was the same group circling. What did I witness? Grand migration?
Yes, migration, and probably a flock of blackbirds from grackles to redwings to redwing blackbirds to cowbirds, all together migrating as a ribbon of birds moving down.
Ribbon, exactly.
Yes, undulating as they go along, and they can be thousands, if not more.
Wow.
And I suspect that's what you saw.
It never finished. Yeah. I went into the store finally, and it was still going.
Yeah, that's what happens. And it was during their migration, probably in the autumn.
Julie, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. 10,000 Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world, 10,000villages.com for additional store locations. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. And Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk birds today with Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Kurt in Nassau. Kurt.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, we've been feeding birds here. I don't know. I can remember when we had evening grosbeaks. That's how long ago it was. And I think we have Carolina wrens. Now, I heard you mention a little bit about them, but little small short birds, tail kind of goes up in the air, a little bit bigger beak.
Yep. It sounds like it. And
a wonderful song.
Oh, beautiful song. And if you put one of those baby room monitors outside, you can hear them sing even
that's
on
a great idea.
Oh,
on
yeah.
A
dismal
day like today.
It's an old house, so there's not much insulation. I can hear them fine.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do that, too. Yeah.
It seems to me that we never had them until we had an ice storm or something, and I had a big pile of brush in the backyard.
Yep.
And that's where they kind of go. Do they nest on the ground, or?
No, they'll nest in a cavity, and oftentimes they'll nest actually on your porch. They're very fond of being around people, places, and one of the fun things about Carolina wrens is that they'll lurk around the windows looking for spider webs peck at the spider eggs that might be against the window and on the porch, under the eaves and the like.
Well, you know, I've had them on the porch numerous times.
Yep.
We've got a screened-in back porch.
Well, they do like suet, and so if you have a suet feeder, that would work for them. And,
yeah, well, I call it the bird buffet. They've got quite a choice things there.
There you go.
The other thing that they'll take in, we have a staff member who is very protective of her Carolina wrens, and she feeds them live mealworms as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I just ordered a bunch of mealworms, and I'm all for it. It's quite the treat, and the bluebirds like them, too.
Now, the live ones, not the dried ones.
That's correct. I haven't had much luck with the dried ones.
No, I tried them once, and they didn't do anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kurt, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Kurt.
Let's go. Oh, sorry to cut him off there. Let's go to Nelson in Bern, New York. Nelson.
Hello. I was really surprised to hear the previous caller talking about a ruffed grouse as being very friendly. I had just an experience recently. A couple of weeks ago, I came home. I live way up in the hills of Bern. It's a very rural area.
Beautiful.
I came home after being away for a few days. And next thing you know, there's a ruffed grouse on the porch, and he's walking around, and he's coming right up to me, and I went in the house. He flew up to the window. He wanted to get in, and I opened the door a crack. He would have come right in the house.
Yeah.
it's a characteristic of that family. They are very, very driven to follow that behavior. And I don't understand it. I don't know that it's fully understood out there. But, you know, they used to call them the fool hen for that very reason.
You think evolutionary-wise, this is not a good plan, and these birds would have been extinct a long time ago.
And some of them are because of that in other areas around the world where birds who don't take up a natural fear of people found out that you know, they're better off flying away
they
rather than honeying up.
Very quickly, yeah.
So if I had fed that bird, I'd never lose it, right? It'd always come back like a pet.
Well, I don't know. Turkeys and ruffed grouse and spruce grouse elsewhere, ptarmigan that showed up near Cape Vincent, New York, was very fond of being around people. So, yeah, it runs in the family. I can't explain it.
Wow.
How interesting. Thank you.
Thanks,
Nelson.
1-800-348-2551. We have two open lines now if you want to jump in. Let's go to Andrew in Amherst, Mass. Andrew, you're on.
Hi, Ray. I love your show.
Thank you.
Great. As of today, this morning, I was looking out my my living room window, and I saw what I thought was a bluebird sitting in an old apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
I got binoculars out, and sure enough, the blue back and the orange breast. And what are these guys doing here at this time of the year? They should be elsewhere where it's warm.
You would think. But contrary to a lot of beliefs, a bluebird does stick around through the winter in our area. And what they tend to do is gather up in small groups, extended family groups, let's say, and find a sheltered area where there's an ample supply of food for them. During the winter, they are basically fruit eaters. So you have an apple tree out there that might still have some apples on there, and that works for them.
Ah, okay. That would, because I live basically in an old apple orchard on the side of the hill, and I've put out, you know, I keep during the springtime before the birds come to nest, I pretty much whack down all, you know, just do a brush hog thing, and I've got lots of bluebird houses out that, you know, I get cleaned, before the birds come. But I've never seen one at this time of the year. It just kind of blew me away.
Well, that's apt to change because now that they found you, I think you'll see more and more of them. And they do like the old orchards for the hollow branches in the trees so that they can roost overnight.
Yeah.
And also the bluebird nest boxes, if folks have those out there, might be a good idea to clean them out right about now so that bluebirds can find them and use them as an overnight roost spot. I remember a delightful picture. It was in Canadian Wildlife somebody had taken a picture of bluebirds in a nest box. It was a whole family, must have been 8 or 9 of them, all clustered inside this nest box. It was one of those open boxes you can photograph in. And they're all looking up and cozied up together for the cold Canadian night.
And for the those of you that are seeing bluebirds, it is not. It's possible also to get them at your bird feeders, that they will eat some sunflowers that don't have the shells on them. They'll eat some crumbled up suet. And going back to live mealworms, if you're providing live mealworms, delicious. They'll love you for it.
Oh, to me, between my neighbor and myself, we're kind of in competition with who has more bluebirds. You know.
Okay.
All right. Well, I hope you win.
We're rooting for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call, Andrew. Number to call here, 1-800-348-2551. It's Bill in Albany. Bill.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling to ask a question. Do birds celebrate rite of passage? And I ask this is because this summer we had a birdhouse in our backyard, and we believe the birdhouse was occupied by house wrens.
Mm-hmm.
And during the summer, we saw the parents coming and going, building their nests, feeding the babies. And then weeks or months later, towards the end of the summer, one night we saw like five or six birds on top of the birdhouse. And it was almost as though the parents were saying to the siblings, the baby birds who are now grown, it's time to go. It's fine. Time to leave. And it almost looked like a celebration. My wife took a picture, and it looked as though human beings would send their kids off to college to rite a passage. That's what this looked like. I mean, was that conscience of the birds or what?
Nah. Something was happening. They were close. Probably it could be one of these extended family groups that were coming and going out of that nest box as a roost site, and they will do that. But the business, they probably not. Celebrating first flight or graduation or, you know, it's just not in their mechanism. They now, that's not to say that birds can't be happy about things and will enjoy a moment. I've seen that happen many times in different manifestations. So I don't like to take away from them the ability to have a good time, to have fun and be happy. but we don't want to build in too many human emotions to that.
Okay.
But they are there. I've seen happy birds, fun birds, playful birds.
All right. But you're not 100% sure that they're actually happy. I mean, they could have an itch or something, right?
Well, they seem to be celebrating.
Look
they
at those
sing.
Chickadees. How can you say chickadees aren't happy?
And they're singing in the wintertime. It's just feel-good days.
Well, Bill, we appreciate the call. We have an email here from Susan that says, just for Rich and Nancy and Ray to enjoy, took this at this morning as I fed the birds, not moldy bread. Oh, dear. Okay, there's a bird here. It's got
a picture.
It's got big wings, and you can tell me what it is. Turkey, maybe? What is that?
I'm looking.
Blue
jay. It's a blue jay.
It's a blue jay. Yes.
I said it was. You sure it's not a turkey?
Yes, it's a. You want it to be? It's not a turkey.
It's a black and white photo. I couldn't tell it was blue.
Well, you can see that it's a blue jay.
How can I tell? It looks like an enormous bird
call,
with
Nancy.
Huge wings. All right, fine. Susan, thanks for the
Thank
email.
Thank you.
It's a great picture, too, by the way.
I still
see In-flight pictures are tough.
It's a turkey. Joshua and Amherst. Joshua, you're on.
Yeah, good afternoon. Great to talk to you guys.
Nice to have you here.
I you were talking about mealworms and how you'd had very good luck with live mealworms and
mm-hmm.
not good luck with dried ones.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a different experience where I've been feeding dried mealworms for a few years now, and they're mm-hmm. immensely popular with nuthatches, chickadees, titmice, the Carolina wrens you mentioned, and on rare occasions I'll even get some sort of warbler or thrush coming in to feed on them.
Well, it's all about learning, and once one is onto it, they need to find that this is okay, and once one of them is into the food, the rest of them will look at it and say, "I want to like a piece of that too."
Yeah,
and so once the word gets out there and they see one another feasting on it, then bingo! I think you're onto it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think the one and only negative part of the experience I've had is that the dried mealworms are sort of expensive as bird feed go. And they're extremely popular with the local starlings. And so I wind up spending a lot of time chasing the starlings away.
Well, good luck with that.
So that they don't empty my whole bank account eating all the mealworms.
Yes, right. Well, you know, there are the pluses and minuses, the advantages. But mealworms are something that I put out there with some level of discretion. Once the birds know that I can supply them, they're more or less waiting for me to show up. And I put a half a dozen out, and they... You know, during the summertime, it was the catbird or the bluebirds that will come and get them. Right now, I'm out of mealworms. I just ordered a whole bunch from an outfit in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
called Grubco. I might mention it because that's where they are.
You know and that? Also available at Wild Birds Unlimited.
Wild Birds Unlimited, of course.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Lisa in Warwick. Lisa, you're on.
Yes, I have a question about the identification of a bird. My 10-year-old and I have been looking through the bird books trying to figure out what we saw at our feeder the other morning. It was a bird about the size of a, like a tufted titmouse, that type size. But it had the most beautiful light yellow breast and almost a brown suede back with some darker brown speckling to it.
Okay.
And it was beautiful, and we have not been able to figure out what we saw. So I said if I heard a bird show on the channel again, I was going to call in and find out for him because he has been dying to find out what bird we saw.
Can you make the sound? Can you make the sound, Lisa?
No.
Rats.
It was on the pane of the window, so it was on the outside, so I couldn't really hear it.
Okay.
But we have a type of feeder that sucks to the wind, a suction cup. So we're seeing a lot of great birds, and my kids and I always do the backyard bird count in the spring, summertime, and these are birds we don't normally see because it's the winter. So I'm identifying it.
Can if it comes back again, can you get a photograph of it?
I will try to do that because I've only saw the one so far. Most of what we're getting are chickadees and things like that.
And how big is this bird again?
It was about the size of a tufted titmouse, on the smaller side. Was not a large bird at all.
And how about a goldfinch? Any chance it might have been a goldfinch that displays that yellow underneath?
It's possible, but it's just the chest was such a beautiful pale yellow, golden yellow. I mean, it's hard to describe. It looked like it was actually painted on its chest. It was so colorful. Hmm. So I was just curious about that. And I had another question real quick for you is, I noticed I'm getting a mixed feed for the birds, but they seem to really like the black sunflower seed. So I'm wondering, would I be better just to put out black sunflower seeds? Will the chickadees and the other smaller birds eat that as well?
Well, I'm going to, Nancy will be best to handle this one, but I'm going to also suggest the possibility of one of the rare warblers that might be hanging around your bird feeder that might be drawn to the attraction. So once again, it's kind of hard to get an ID from a description like that, but try to get a picture. And then since you are, you sound like you have some pretty smart kids, put them on eBird and we can start a conversation from there where the picture can be posted.
Great.
That would be awesome. Yeah, we were so excited because we had, like I said, it was the only first one and only one we've seen so far. So we thought we might have something unusual.
Well, it sounds like you might very well. So,
all right, Nancy, the second question, the black sunflower seeds.
You know, black oil sunflowers does form the basis of all the bird, a lot of the bird seed blends that you see, because a lot of birds do like it. But what you will find by putting out a diversity of seed with, you know, like a bird seed blend instead of just as black oil, is a greater diversity of birds and potentially more birds, just because you're offering variety. It's like not eating hot dogs every single day, you
right.
know, as an individual. I'm sorry?
I just noticed they were picking those out a lot and leaving a lot of the smaller seeds. So I just
Interesting.
Wondered, you know.
Well, and, you know, what you have sometimes is that the blends that you buy at some locations are filled with just filler stuff that
junk.
Maybe even our birds don't eat.
Junk.
Yep, little roly-poly red things called Milo.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And all that is doing is adding weight to your bird seed, and you're paying for that, but no Northeast birds eat that.
Lovely.
So that's why buying a decent quality blend that isn't filled with any fillers, a great thing that you can look for within bird seed. I just brought in a 5-pound bag of peanuts for Rich. Peanuts are a great addition to a bird seed blend.
Is there a particular brand you'd recommend that wouldn't have all that filler?
Are you allowed to? That's a good question. You know what? Why don't you pop an email over to Nancy? What's your email address there?
At wbu@nicap.rr.com.
That's at Wild Birds Unlimited. WBU at NICAP.
Okay. And we're out of time.
Thanks,
Lisa. Good luck. Get that picture and send it in. Rich, your blog again?
Times Union. TimesUnion.com. And you could go to the blog section and look up birding. There it is.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you so much to Nancy and Rich for being here. The support comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York, an independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. Edward Garbosik, certified financial planner, serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed at HavikinWealthStrategies.com. Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley. Raise your glass, HudsonWineMerchants.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials. Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, RhinebeckArt.com. Thanks for listening once again. Thanks to Rich and Nancy. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Mary Vetter. And our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's a Food Friday. Deanna Fox will be here, and we'll be talking about delicious pie. Oh, how sweet it is.